Hello, friends. This is Cher Nelson with Compassion Radio, and today we're bringing you a classic program. As you know, yesterday was the beginning of our 75th year in broadcasting, and on our 50th anniversary, Norm and his father Wilbur made a recording to take you back to the very beginning roots of the program and to bring you through some of the growth. Because this was produced earlier, you'll hear Bram setting up the program for you, and then you will hear Norm and his father. We hope you'll enjoy this look back into history because I know many of you have never actually heard Wilbur on the air, and you really need to know who it was that started this.
I just want to be a godly man. Those words were spoken to me by Wilbur Nelson, my dad and the founder of this radio ministry. Wilbur Nelson was many wonderful things, but above all else, he was, by the power of divine grace, a godly man.
Intrepid.
When God tells you to go, then everything works out. He provides.
Involved.
It is so exciting to see what God can do, and this is why there is so much hope.
International.
Compassion Radio allows the listener to get involved in projects that are going to change history.
This is Compassion Radio. Today we're celebrating, and you're invited to the party. Hello and welcome to Compassion Radio. Those who forget the past are condemned to repeat it, they say. Well, in our case, that wouldn't be such a bad thing. There's not a corner of the globe in which Compassion Radio has not ministered.
In 7 decades of ministry, a lot of amazing things have happened. This has always been a forward-looking ministry, pursuing the new thing God is doing in some of the world's toughest places.
Each day we bring you the story and the opportunity to get involved. Now, remembering the past for us just gets us fired up all the more. Today, Norm takes us on a very personal journey through the heart and mind of the founder of this ministry, Wilbur Nelson. It was recorded on the 50th anniversary of Compassion Radio. Now, it wasn't very often that Wilbur faced the mic from the visitor seat, but in this special interview, Norm and Wilbur together remember and revive the passion that is at the heart of this ministry. Here's Norm with his dad, the Reverend Wilbur Nelson.
Well, today we tribute my father, the late Wilbur Nelson, who founded this ministry on March 25, 1944. As you may know, my dad passed away at the age of 92, and we thought that it would be appropriate to listen once again to the interview that I did with him on the occasion of his 50th anniversary in broadcasting ministry. In that rare interview, he shares the story of how he came to found this ministry. I think you'll enjoy this program of recollection at this special time in our ministry's history. So, let's move on to that interview, and we'll start it with this well-known theme song that so many of us lovingly remember. You know, Dad, God was at work in you way back in 1944. And you know, I wonder, was God's direction absolutely clear to you as you began to take those first steps in Christian radio?
Well, I wanted to enter this field of service, and I expected to, I guess. But there seemed no possibility of doing so. I had a little family to care for and was occupied in business. And though I had studied for the ministry, it just didn't seem possible to get started.
Well, how big a thing was broadcasting in those days, especially religious broadcasting?
Well, it was just coming into a sort of maturity, I think, although as I look back now, it wasn't as mature by far as it is now. Gospel broadcasting was quite a big thing.
Who were some of the key broadcasters back in those early days, say before you got involved in broadcasting?
Well, of course, there was Charles E. Fuller with his old-fashioned revival hour, and his morning broadcast, the Pilgrim's Hour, with which I had a part. And then, of course, there was Haven of Rest, which I have always regarded with great esteem, and others, but those two were very influential in my life.
You know, it's hard to believe that there was ever a time in your adult life when you weren't a religious broadcaster. But the fact is, you haven't always been involved in the ministry of broadcasting, have you? And it makes me wonder, Just what did you do before you heard the call of God to be a gospel broadcaster?
Well, I was involved in the printing business and was the supervisor of production at a printing company in Los Angeles. And I was also involved in music. I was the minister of music at the First Church of the Nazarene in Pasadena, California. And that is about what I was involved in doing at that time.
Just what were the circumstances that God used to move you toward the ministry of religious broadcasting? Were there any influential people that kind of pushed you along in this direction?
Well, Bob Pierce and I had gone to Pasadena College, which is now Point Loma Nazarene College, and he was involved in a ministry with his father-in-law, Floyd Johnson. And he called me one day and said, "Would you come over on Friday night and sing for us?" I said, "Sure." So I went over and sang, and I was asked to come back the following Friday night. That following Friday night, Charlie Turner, a fine singer, was there, and we formed a quartet. And I was more involved in gospel broadcasting from then on. I enjoyed my ministry with Floyd Johnson, and then I was asked to join the musical staff of the Old Fashioned Revival Hour, became involved in the Pacific Lutheran Hour broadcast, and little by little I became pretty well occupied in gospel broadcasting almost entirely.
Now, you mentioned Charles Fuller. And,
yes.
Of course, Fuller was certainly one of the top people in broadcasting in those days. And First Mate Bob was also involved, wasn't he, in
yes.
sort of propelling you in this direction?
Oh, yes. I visited the Haven of Rest one time and was asked by First Mate Bob to give the message that morning. It worked out very gratifyingly.
Who are some of those important people that you would regard as heroes or as teachers, as people who kind of showed you what ministry was all about and from whom you've taken your lead in your ministry through the years?
Well, I benefited very greatly from reading the life stories of such men as Hudson Taylor and Charles Kalman and other men such as that, whose lives have been so richly blessed and so vitally useful in the work of God through the years. And then, of course, I had contact with other men who influenced me very greatly. And I thank God for the memories I have of those godly pastors who encouraged me and prayed for me. I remember when I was a teenager, dear old Brother Ford of the Denver Mission that I attended would often put his arm around me and say, "God bless you. You're my boy. I'm praying for you. God is going to use your life." And, oh, he has lingered in my memory with so much affection ever since those days when I was just a teenager.
I think that's so neat, and in a way it's so incredible that somebody like this Mr. Ford, whom people worldwide or even across the country don't know at all, had such an important part in encouraging you. And my goodness, how important that is to have somebody who really believes in you like that.
That's true. J.M. Ford came to Denver under sentence of death. The doctor said if you go to Colorado, you might live a year. He had tuberculosis. He was 6 feet 4 inches tall and weighed about 130 pounds. But he worked all day in a glass and paint factory, and then every night in the year conducted services in that mission down on Larmer Street. I revere and love his memory. God bless him.
Of course, here we are, and you've conducted this ministry for so many years. Just how did the Morning Chapel Hour come into existence? At what point did you feel God moving you in the direction of founding a ministry like this? What were some of the circumstances that got it going?
Well, we had started a little church in Los Angeles, and a visitor to the church service one Sunday asked me if I would appear on the broadcast of the Morning Bible Hour, which was conducted by the father of my dear friend, Clarence Erickson. And he had discontinued his ministry, and his wife asked me if I would be willing to take it over. So I did. And the Morning Bible Hour became, in time, the Morning Chapel Hour, because the name Morning Bible Hour was already in use in Minnesota when we began expanding.
I think that's so interesting. I think people out there in the general public tend to think of religious broadcasters as kind of lone wolves, as being very independent, but you really are linking the Morning Chapel Hour in a number of ways to other broadcasters and to other broadcasts, Haven of Rest,
yes.
Old Fashioned Revival Hour, now here's Clarence Erickson. Is there the kind of fellowship among religious broadcasters today that existed back in those early days? Or was there a strong kind of unity among broadcasters in the early days?
Oh, yes, there was a very strong and very blessed relationship between broadcasters. And I remember years ago we had a Southern California group of broadcasters. It was a heartwarming experience to meet with them from time to time. We'd eat together and pray together and discuss various problems and such things together. And it was very profitable, and I have very pleasant memories of that. And it is so today. I am thankful to God that many of today's broadcasters of my age are very dear to me, and we fellowship together from time to time.
Now, the morning chapel hour then began as the morning Bible hour.
Yes.
At what point did we make that little shift to the morning chapel hour?
Well, actually, it didn't begin as the morning Bible hour. We had what we called the radio family circle with my wife and a little boy, I think you know. It was very little then. He gave the mail address and told a Bible story when he was just knee-high to a grasshopper, so to speak. But we were conducting that radio family circle until the day came when the door opened for the morning Bible hour, which later became the morning chapel hour. And I've been involved in the pastoral ministry since 1944, at the very time when the morning chapel hour began.
Now, that's interesting. Most people think that pastoring a church is a full-time job, and it certainly is.
It surely is.
And conducting a national daily radio ministry is certainly a full-time job. Now, that adds up to two full-time jobs.
Yes.
How did you ever pull that off?
Not very well, I'm afraid. But just seemed to be the way God led me to go. And I was blessed and am blessed with a very, very fine constitution. I've been superbly healthy for all these years. And it was possible for me to cover a lot more ground than I would have if I'd had physical liabilities to contend with.
Do you think that pastoral ministry has affected the nature of your radio ministry through the years?
I think it has, and I hope it has. I don't want to be considered just a broadcaster, although there's nothing wrong with that if God called you to do it. But I thank God that I've been privileged to serve as a pastor since way back there in 1944. There were a few years I took off, and I was lost, didn't know what to do with myself till I got back into pastoral work.
If you don't mind, I'd like to reminisce for just a minute. What was it like broadcasting back in those days before there were tape recorders and cassettes and satellites that beamed the signal around the world? Was everything done live? How did it work? What was it like in those days?
Well, it was mostly live, and it was tough. There were early hours, and there was morning traffic to contend with as we went to the studios. There were times when you had a headache or had a cold, and you sounded like death cooled off. Then, of course, there was the matter of financing. It was just about one jump ahead of the sheriff for a long time there. But we've never had a superfluous amount of money. We've always had to trust God, and if you ask me, that's the best way to go about it. Tell the people and trust the Lord.
We still trust God and God's people to see God's work done all around the world. Friends, Compassion Radio has made it our mission to enable people just like you to be the first to love. And we do it month by month with special partnership projects with committed ministries located in dozens of different countries. We go to these places to help them, and we bring home the stories of how you are helping God's kingdom to grow all around the world. That mission and ministry continue, but it will only continue if you stand with us. This year alone, I've already been invited to travel to Cuba, the Sahara, the Middle East, Northern India, China, and Eastern Europe. Why? So that we can become eyewitnesses to the amazing progress being made right now toward completing the Great Commission. The church around the world is on fire and bringing the gospel to places it has never gone before. The story they have to tell needs to be heard. It needs to be celebrated and supported here in the West. But friends, we haven't gone yet, and we can't go unless you send us. By your generosity this year alone, we have been able to fund Bible projects to our military and to rebuild key facilities at the Door of Hope in Johannesburg, South Africa. However, an unprecedented drop in our sustaining monthly giving has put us far behind our bare minimum budget to keep this program on this station. I hope you understand how important it is for us to see this trend reversed immediately. Can I count on you? Please contact us today with your gifts. Call us at 1-800-868-2478. That's 1-800-868-2478. Mail us at Compassion Radio, P.O. Box 2770, Orange, California 92859. Or give right now at CompassionRadio.com. Thank you so much for taking this plea seriously and prayerfully. We love you, friends. And we thank you for all you do through Compassion Radio. And now back to Norm's special interview with his father, Wilbur Nelson.
Now, forgive me if this is inappropriate, but you just said that we were one step ahead of the sheriff, and maybe that's kind of
I don't want to get the wrong impression.
Inappropriate way of mentioning the fact.
That's just another way of saying that we just never had much in the pantry. We just had to go hand to mouth, and thank God it was his hand in our mouths, and he supplied the needs.
It's unfortunate, but the sheriffs have been involved, haven't they, with some broadcasters in recent years? And I wonder, have some of the scandals, and I don't need to be specific about it, I think everybody knows, have those scandals had a negative impact on religious broadcasting and broadcasters and the public's trust of broadcasters? How do you think that's affected ministries like ours, for example?
There have been times since those unfortunate things when we have had a very difficult time sustaining and maintaining the ministry, and no one knows that better than you. But I have the feeling that God's people have a measure of discernment. So I think that in general, the people have confidence in this ministry. And I know a number of fine ministries I hope they still have confidence in, because I would trust many of the gospel broadcasters I know with anything I have. And if I needed someone to pray for me, they're the ones I'd go to and say, pray for me. I have high respect for gospel broadcasters in general.
Virtually all religious broadcasters, certainly the ones that we know about and honor, are honest and ministries of integrity and have been throughout the years.
Sure,
so
sure.
People can give and they can trust these radio ministries and television ministries.
Right.
I think it's important to say that.
It is important.
We're kind of jumping around here, but with more and more Bible teaching being done on the radio these days, it seems as though there are fewer radio ministries that feature Christian music. And I wonder, in your outlook on things, just how important is music in presenting the gospel by radio? We certainly feature music, a lot of it. I wonder how you see the role of music in broadcast ministry today.
Well, as you know, there's a little slogan I've been using for many years, songs and thoughts that lift the heart. Sometimes I improve on that by saying gospel songs and Bible truth. And that is what I felt led to present on the broadcast. When I first started, I felt that I wanted to use these two means of expression to proclaim the great good news of the gospel. The Bible has much to say of singing to God and singing of God and singing for God. I feel that music should be used if one has an understanding of it and a talent for it and an appreciation for it. I know men whom I think would be wiser to leave music alone because they don't have musical background. They have gifts that are equally valuable, and they should use those gifts. With me, I was musical from the time I was 4 years old. Sang in a quartet. My brother and two sisters and I had a quartet when I was a little fellow, 5 or 6 years of age, singing four-part harmony. So I think music is very important. I feel that the Bible encourages us to sing songs of praise and thanksgiving and so on to God. And radio is a beautiful and wonderful means of doing that very thing.
You know, this is kind of a funny question, I suppose, but is there anything that you'd do differently if you were starting over right now, today, in Christian broadcasting? Is there any approach you would take that you haven't made through the years?
Well, I've followed the course that I feel was right for me. I cannot say that I've done it the wrong way, but I have sometimes been tempted to believe that I would have done better if I had been either a pastor or a broadcaster. I've never felt that I've been as effective a pastor as I could have been if I'd given my whole time to it, and I've never felt that I have been as effective a broadcaster as I could have been if I'd given my whole time to that. I wouldn't advise any pastor to try to cover both of these very vital fields. But on the other hand, when I think of all of the evidence that has piled up during the years concerning the pastoral ministry and the radio ministry, I have a feeling that put them together, and it may be that I have been able to accomplish as much as any gifts I have make possible. I can't say I regret anything, and if I were starting over, I may just do the very same thing, because this is what I made up.
I don't think I know anybody in religious broadcasting who is also a pastor, but also has conducted the musical group that does the singing on the program, has done the arrangements, has sung, and has been involved in so many aspects of ministry. And if I sound like I'm bragging here, I plead guilty, because I just think that there is nobody in all of Christian broadcasting that has been so wonderfully gifted and at the same time used those gifts so effectively and with such integrity. So that's just a grateful son bragging a little bit on his dad here.
I don't know what to say to that.
No comment is necessary. Thanks so much, Dad.
Thank you.
My goodness, that recorded interview from a decade ago brings back a lot of great memories and feelings. You know, my dad, Wilbur Nelson, was not a perfect human being. There's only been one of those. But he wanted to be a godly man. And as one who knew him rather well, I can say that he was that.
He's the healer of broken hearts. He'll mend your shattered dreams. He'll pick up the threads of your broken life and weave them together again. To your soul he'll bring peace and joy. Your friend indeed he'll be. The healer of broken hearts is Jesus of Galilee. Is your life full of heartaches and sadness? Are your dreams all shattered and torn? There is one who through mercy and suffering for you every sorrow has borne. He's the healer of broken hearts. He'll mend your shattered dreams. He'll pick up the threads of your broken life and weave them together again. To your soul he'll bring peace and joy. Your friend indeed he'll be. The healer of broken hearts is Jesus of Galilee.
My friend, I'm sure you've heard the well-known comment regarding birthdays, often made by those who are sensitive about growing old. The comment goes like this: I don't like getting old, but it sure beats the alternative. Well, this month of March marks the birthday of this radio ministry called, now, Compassion Radio. You know, only a handful of the thousands of half-hour daily radio ministries that are out there today have reached such a standard of longevity. I'm being humble about this, believe me, because we are humbled by the faithfulness of God and God's people in keeping this radio outreach alive and effective, and many of you listening right now have had a part in that.
The opportunities presenting themselves to Compassion Radio right now are frankly amazing. I want to bring you these stories and interviews so that your faith will expand and burst forth with joy and powerful authority. That is our calling. Will you help us keep doing this very thing? Will you help us stay on the air and in the field, bringing you good news stories each and every day? We can't do it without your prayer and support, friends, and right now we need both. My predecessors, Wilbur and Norm Nelson, both joyfully expected God to meet every need and provide for every ministry opportunity. And when it came to specific financial needs, they simply say, pray to the Lord, and tell God's people. Now, they stuck by that formula for 74 years, and now we start year 75. God has always inspired our Compassion Radio family to give in exactly the measure needed, and I'm counting on the fact that this is still just as true today. And as Norm is fond of saying, I'm also certain of this. The ministry of showing up is vitally important. When you give, I know that God will be pleased, and the world will hear how much you love them. So let us hear from you today.
Reach us by phone by calling 1-800-868-2478. That's 1-800-868-2478. By mail at Post Office Box 2770, Orange, California, 92859. Again, that's Box 2770, Orange, California, 92859. And we're always there for you online at CompassionRadio.com. And that phone number once more, 1-800-868-2478. I'm Jim Governale, and we'll see you again next time with more Compassion Radio.